All right, well, good afternoon, everyone. It's great to be here. And before I actually get started, let me just have a quick shout out to the organizers for putting together a really nice two-day conference here. So I'm going to be talking about shifting middle-class dynamics in Canada with a particular interest on what's happening at the urban level. This is work that I've been doing jointly with Niall Harney, who is a recent graduate from our program at McGill and is now at the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives. And it's a mainly descriptive paper with some exploratory modeling. So at the end, I'm also looking forward to your questions, criticisms, and comments here. If in the UK, the debate here in terms of policy has centered mostly around leveling up, in Canada, it's been more about broader issues concerning the middle class and notions of inclusive growth. So since the election of the Trudeau Liberals in 2015, five of our last seven budgets at the federal level have had middle class in their title, right? In 2019, we've also had, I don't know if this has a pointer or not, I think maybe, okay. We've also had on the upper right-hand side here a minister appointed in charge of middle-class prosperity, right? All of which reflects these issues about the well-being, the state of the middle class, and the future of the middle class in Canadian society. Now, these debates are, of course, set within broader concerns over rising inequality. So in the Canadian context here, as three-quarter of OECD countries have experienced over the last 30 years, inequality in Canada has grown. This is especially true for us from the early 1990s through to the mid-2000s, when Canada registers the second highest or fastest growth rate in terms of levels of inequality over that period of time. Now, of course, these are issues that have been of public concern, policy concern. Since the Great Recession, levels of inequality have kind of tapered off, and what we see is a bit of a seesaw pattern, right? Part of that secular stagnation, if you will, which Ron mentioned earlier on. But the latest figures are kind of indicating another uptick post-pandemic-wise in terms of levels of inequality. So what we want to do in this paper is see what the middle class squeeze is all about. And there are really two bodies of relevant literature that come into play here. Economists have for some time tracked what's going on at the national level. And when we look at these studies, we do find declining shares of income, but also percentage shares of workers that fall within the middle class. The other body of work is mostly done by geographers and sociologists who are interested in the kind of spatial polarizations that's happening within cities. So similar to what we were just presented earlier on here. And what we see is there is indeed growing spatial polarization in terms of income inequality across neighborhoods within some of Canada's largest cities. What's missing, though, is something at the mezzo level, which is more of a comparative study of patterns of middle class dynamics and how they've changed over the last 30 years or so across cities in Canada. So that's essentially what we set out to do in this paper, right? Present the first portrait of a comparative study up to date of those dynamics of middle class change in Canadian cities. Once we do so, based on the patterns we observe, we're also interested to see if there are similarities in terms of middle-class trajectories. Are certain cities moving in the same direction, others kind of lagging behind, if you will? And if that's the case, then we also wanted to explore what are some of the drivers of those kinds of dynamics that we're observing. And if I have a little bit of time here at the end of the paper, I just want to kind of scratch the surface of some of the policy implications of our findings. So when we actually started diving into this kind of work, one of the things we quickly realized is that defining the middle class is not an easy thing, right? And so, you know, if you look at popular discourse, or in the political discourse, it's, you know, middle class workers are somewhere in between not being too poor, neither too rich. Minister Fortier, when asked to define the middle class in an interview in 2020, responding that it's something where people feel that they can afford their way of life, they have a quality of life, and they can have, you know, send their kids to play hockey or even have different activities, right? So this is a very Canadian response, if you will. But it does kind of draw connections to notions related to income, consumption, recreation, a sense of quality of life. I also thought it was quite interesting that she used the term wear, right? Which implies a social dimension and a possible sense of differentiation based on place here, right? And that's something we really don't know much of within the Canadian context. When we look at the historical roots of middle class, right, as a concept, it emerges in 17th, 18th century Britain, right, with the middling sorts or middle ranks. It gains prominence in the 19th century with the Parliamentary Reform Act, right? And the middle class here vote is seen as particularly important in terms of being a moderating force within the population. And of course, the 20th century conceptualization of the middle class is really tied to the rise of Fordism. Now, when we look at middle class definitions, there are very important differences across different disciplinary boundaries, right? So economists, for instance, think about the middle class in terms of income distribution, trying to set what are going to be the lower and upper boundaries for a particular portion of those workers. Sociological approaches look at the division of labor, think about occupations, right? Labor market positioning and or educational attainment. So there are differences here. What we're going to do in this case is fall back on some economic definitions based on the kind of data that we have at our disposition. So in terms of carrying out our analysis, the data that we do use is the Canadian Census, which is available every fifth year in Canada. We have a 30-year horizon from 1986 to 2016. We're going to focus on the active labor force, which is those individuals 15 years and above, with a minimum wage income level of $1,000. We actually look at two income concepts, wages and salaries on the one hand, and also total income, which also includes government transfers, investments, etc. Both of these income concepts we're looking at on a before-tax basis, right? And so we're going to be using different definitions of those upper and lower boundaries, but just as a reference point, when you think about the poverty line in the Canadian context, Stats Canada will define it as those who are below the 50th percent of the median. Okay, so that's kind of a reference point to keep in mind for some of those definitions we'll be applying later on. Our spatial unit of analysis, as I said, is going to be at the city level. So in Canada, these are defined as census metropolitan areas, the larger metro areas, if you will, and census agglomerations. Now, of course, based on population growth and decline, the number of cities in each census changes. So what we did was extract those cities that are continuously defined over all of the different censuses we have at our disposition, which gives us a sample of about 119 cities. So it's a fairly widespread look at the urban system, which represents upwards of about 80% of the total Canadian population. Now, in terms of those middle class definitions, so our primary focus is going to be on the Pew definition, which looks at the middle class between the 67th and 200% of the median, very close to what the OECD has been using over the last few years to define middle class across different countries. We're also going to be looking at a definition proposed by Charles Beach, a well-known economist in Canada, which uses a narrower bandwidth, if you will, but one that starts just above the poverty line, so from the 50th to 150% of the median, right? So kind of the lower middle class population is being targeted here. We're also going to look at the middle 60, and we're also going to use the Palma ratio, which is more about what kind of dynamics are happening in terms of the upper middle class. When we do so, there are two indicators that we're particularly interested in. One is the percentage of workers that fall within those boundaries as a total of the labor force. And the other one is the percentage share of their income vis-a-vis the total income pie. And that's really our primary focus in this case in terms of looking at those income dynamics. And another important point to make here, when we're looking at how we define the median, our baseline is a local measure of median incomes for each of the cities in our sample, right? To reflect some of that spatial variation. So let's look at some results here, starting with national level trends, right? So on the left-hand side, what you have here are the table with the different income cutoffs for 2016, the latest year in our sample, for the different definitions of the middle class. So that gives you a sense of where one falls in terms of their income levels. The interesting chart is on the right-hand side here, and that is actually trending or tracking the middle class using the different definitions. So on the top portion here, what you see are the Pew definition, the PALMA, and the middle 60, which all seem to peak in 1991 and ever since are trending downwards, right? And the variation in terms of middle class decline as a share of total income varies between 3 and 8 percentage points over those 25 years. The bottom middle class indicator, which is also trending downwards, is the one that Charles Beach would normally use, right? Now, you can see what the issue is here. It's actually targeting a much smaller portion of the labor force, which is why the level in terms of middle class shares is considerably lower than the other ones. We can then actually look at the various measures. So the middle part of this table corresponds to the chart we've just shown. So you can actually see what the percentage declines are for the different definitions. But it's also interesting to know what happens in terms of the lower income thresholds, right? So very modest declines of income below those lower boundaries, if you will. So the action really is on the bottom part of the table, right, which is a close correspondence to the decline in the middle class share, whereas upper incomes have been growing at a much faster clip. Okay, we can also carve out the data in different ways, looking at male female workers, and this is interesting because it actually resonates with some of the patterns that we observe in the US, for instance, right? So the decline in middle class share is much more pronounced for male workers. And if we actually look on the bottom left-hand portion using the Beach definition, we can see that female wages have actually grown in terms of their overall middle class share. So this is somewhat of a good news story, but we have to remember there's still a lot of work to do here as female workers earn about 88, 89 cents per dollar to their male counterparts in Canada. Okay, so those are the kind of broad national trends that we're observing, which we've been documenting for some time. This is where things start to get really interesting. To the best of our knowledge, this is the first map of middle class dynamics and how they've changed over time in Canada across the urban system. So there's a lot of information here. Let's just take a minute to walk through things. Each of the cities is, of course, weighted by population. So the size of the circle reflects larger cities, for instance. The color code that we use represents the size of the middle class share for each of those urban areas. So the darker shaded areas are higher middle class shares. And if you look closely within each of the circles, you'll also find an upward or downward pointing triangle, which tells us something about how middle class decline or growth has occurred over that 30-year period. So what are the spatial trends we're picking up on here? The first one that's really interesting is that if we look at Canada's 6 largest cities, with the exception of Edmonton, all large metropolitan areas have experienced significant declines in middle class shares, right? The largest one in Toronto, which had a middle class share of about 58% in 1986, and that slips to 47% by 2016. So a very important change there. If you scan the country east to west, you also start to pick up on some interesting regional divides, right? So middle class shares and median income growth levels are typically higher in the western parts of the country compared to eastern Canada. And the third one, which is also kind of interesting, is in the inset map on top in northern Quebec there, which depicts those cities in the Quebec City to Windsor corridor, right? There's an interesting dynamic that's happening here. If you look at all of those cities in the Montreal-Quebec portion of that inset map, they're shown in dark black. So middle class shares have actually grown in what is now being called the Arc de Manufacture in Quebec, so a new manufacturing arc, if you will, right? Contrast that to southern Ontario cities, which used to be the industrial heartland of Canada, where you find declining middle class shares or stagnating middle class shares. So there's a shift happening within that portion of the country. Now, when we think about middle class change, we also have to think about labor force or population changes, right? And Betsy has done a little bit of work in Canada on that topic. What we have here are the percentage changes in the middle class on the horizontal axis plotted against percentage change in labor force to see what kind of population or demographic dimensions or dynamics are accompanying those middle class changes. The more dynamic cities, if you want to think about these in that term or sense, are the ones in the upper left or right-hand quadrant, right? These are cities where population is growing, labor force size is growing, and the middle class share is also growing. All of the cities below the horizontal axis are experiencing declines in labor force size over time. And particularly those in the bottom left-hand quadrant, right? Those are the ones that have both declining middle classes and population. They tend to be the ones that are mono-industry, old resource dependent. Think of the Canadian typical mill town, right? Port Alberni, Baie-Comeau. Those are classic examples of deindustrialization, if you will. And on the top left-hand quarter, we have growing population, but declining middle class sizes, right? So this is the classic story of polarization. And of course, we find most large Canadian cities in that particular quadrant. But we wanted to tease things out a little bit more and understand some of these changing dynamics. So what we did next is develop a composite variable which looks at changes in middle class size over time, changes in median income, and also changes in labor force size over time, right? And once we have that composite index, we run a simple cluster analysis to try and identify similarities between the trajectories of those cities. And what we have is a simple five-class typology where on the left-hand side, we have those so-called rapid growth cities where the middle class is doing really well, population size is growing, as are median incomes. A lot of those, by the way, are tied to the new resource boom in Canada post-2000. So you can think of the gas and oil industry in those western parts of the country, for instance. The middle part are going to be medium or mixed growth profile type cities. And as we move towards the right, we have slow growth or declining regions, if you will, which again are those mostly tied to the old resource-based activities, mono-industry towns in Quebec, in British Columbia, in various parts of the country. Now, once we've identified this cluster structure, we can also start exploring things a little bit more with some models to try and determine what are some of the drivers of those dynamics, okay? So what we have in the first two columns to the left, right, are multinomial logistic regression models, which are looking at the clusters, right? So cities that belong either to rapid or slow and declining regions, and what are the key characteristics that may predict membership in those clusters. So we've organized the information here through labor market variables, socio-demographic variables, and then industrial sectors, right? So let's start off with the rapid growth predictors. Well, of course, those with higher wages pop up as being positive, right? Those that have unemployment rates that are higher are going to be more frequently observed in the referent group. So in other words, those regions or cities that are in the rapid growth areas have very low unemployment levels. In terms of socio-demographic variables, higher education again pops up with a relative risk ratio greater than one, as we would expect. And the industrial sectors here, construction and retail sales activities are picking up on some of these dynamic kind of economies. On the slow growth side of things, right, those regions that are found there particularly have very high levels of unemployment, higher levels of part-time workers, not surprising, right? And as we go down the list, there's a bit of a diversity story here, which is interesting. If you look at the results for visible minority, those regions have lower levels compared to the referent group, right? And then the last column on the right-hand side of the table is a fixed effects model which exploits some of the temporal changes across those cities. And here, the dependent variable is middle class as a percentage of labor force size. And we just wanted to see what are some of the key drivers there, right? So again, medium wages comes up as important. Labor force size picks up on that large metropolitan area story we were describing earlier. Part-time workers is also as expected, so higher percentages of part-time, lower middle class results. Female participation rates are, of course, important. There's an aging dimension here. If you look at the negative on the seniors variable that we have, which is also important. So we're starting to get a better sense of what some of the key drivers are across the urban system in terms of middle class dynamics and change over time. Okay, so let me conclude. I think I'm okay doing in terms of time here. What are some of the key trends, right? Well, we're seeing a lot of the national trends that have been documented over the last few years, right? So declines in middle class shares, changes or differences between female versus male workers with a more pronounced decline for male workers in particular. I think what's really interesting in our case is what's going on below the national, right? What kind of a spatial story emerges from that analysis at the urban level. Right, so the large metropolitan areas certainly are seeing the fastest declines in terms of middle class size. There's an east-west divide across the urban hierarchy in Canada, and there's also that interesting dynamic between Quebec and Ontario and central Canada that seems to be emerging, coming into sharper focus. And then we can also start teasing out some of the drivers, as I've said here. In terms of the study's limitations, one thing I do want to point out, we do not control for cost of living differences across cities. That's a very challenging thing because there is simply not enough data across all those 119 cities. One thing we're kind of thinking about is maybe using gross monthly rents, which is also information that is in the census, to use as a proxy in this analysis, right? So that's something that we're going to be adding to the analysis. And then when we get to some of the policy implications, right? What should we be thinking about? So Canada doesn't really have a regional development policy that is centralized in the kind of classic way or as it did in the 70s and 80s. What we are showing here is that probably we should be thinking about having a closer look at place-based policies. And this is starting to come out in Ottawa in policy circles. Female part rates are very important, right? So should we be thinking about a national child care policy that was recently announced, right? So those are the kinds of elements that we can kind of take a look at here in terms of policy implications. What about future research avenues? Well, we've just recently been given access to the 2021 census data, so we're going to be adding that information, which should also provide a better window into the kind of the post-pandemic impacts in terms of middle-class activities. And we're also doing related work on the impact of AI and automation. So we have a paper on regional employment impacts. There's very detailed occupational data in that particular analysis that we can match to some of those middle-class definitions to see whether or not perhaps middle-class workers are more vulnerable than other portions of the labor force in terms of the impacts of AI and automation in the future. Okay, so on that note, let me end there, and I'd be happy to take questions.